Welcome to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett McGarry, and this week at the movies, something that hits dangerously close to home in terms of, could this happen? Plus...
I'm Jeff Braun. I'll review Dev Patel's Monkey Man, and I finished watching Ripley on Netflix. Plus...
I want to discuss the latest rabbit hole that I've fallen down over the last few months, which led me this past weekend to the Showcase of the Immortals.
But first, another of our favorites is gone for good. Let's talk about the Curb Your Enthusiasm series finale.
This is how we should have ended the finale. Oh my God, you're right. How did we not think of that?
As expected, Larry David put his show to rest with the Curb version of the Seinfeld finale, him being on trial for the misdeeds of his life, with a crucial twist at the end. And from what I've seen, most people dug it, as opposed to the Seinfeld finale. I will say, the afternoon before the Curb episode, I did rewatch the Seinfeld finale, which I had not seen in a long time. Usually when I rewatch Seinfeld, I start with season 3 and quit after season 7, because it took a while for the show to start firing on all cylinders, and then it overstayed at the very end, getting very silly. At any rate, the Seinfeld finale, not as bad as its reputation. The concept is great, which I'm guessing is a big part why Larry wanted to bring it back, but I still sort of get why people weren't digging it. It's just so different from the rest of the series. Seinfeld was the kind of show that didn't need a finale. None of the stories were ever building to anything, so they could have just done a normal episode. But like we've talked about many times, Hollywood has decided final episodes need to be a big deal, even for shows about nothing. More than 25 years later, without the hype, less pressure on that episode to be so special in Curb's case, and I thought it mostly worked. I do think it's weird, you know, or anyways, the Seinfeld finale, that the four main characters were basically reduced to audience members during their trial, which took up a bulk of the show. Now, Curb's style and format was quite a bit different than Seinfeld, and obviously the hype wasn't the same. There were 75 million people that watched the Seinfeld finale, and 1.1 million watched the Curb finale, so the pressure was absolutely off. And we got a lot of great stuff from everyone. Jeff, Susie, Leon, Cheryl, Ted Danson, and Lewis, the whole gang involved, all with some very funny stuff. And then Jerry Seinfeld, of course, came in as well. Aside from the framework of the episode, there were a few other Seinfeld references. The pants tent recall joke was done similarly in Seinfeld with a button conversation. And the same camera move used for that shot as well. Both episodes also had airplane scenes, things like that. I will say that I don't obsessively rewatch Curb like I did Seinfeld. So when they were showing old clips of previous Curb Your Enthusiasms, some of them I just didn't remember. And I mean, some go back 24 years. So a lot of time has passed. And you could tell because the first couple of seasons weren't even shot in widescreen because nothing was shot in widescreen aside from feature films. There was no TV widescreen. So they had to blow up the frame to fit for widescreen and it made it look grainier. Just looked old. And Larry, I mean, he aged from 50 to 75 over the course of the series, which is pretty significant in the aging department. It was just every now and then. And then it's like, whoa, this show's been on for a long time. But I thought it was a lot of fun and a great send-off for Curb Your Enthusiasm. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was a perfect finale. I thought the swerve at the end was perfect, the way that they made it look like they were going to essentially end it on the exact same note as the Seinfeld finale did, and then there was a change at the last second. And I also enjoyed how, and the title of the episode was No Lessons Learned.
Yeah.
And so I guess that was sort of a play on, did we learn anything from the Seinfeld finale? But also, like, at the second after Larry David's situation changes, he's already moved on with his life. He doesn't even spend one moment thinking about the circumstances that got him to that position, not just this season, but throughout his entire life. He just immediately moves on, doesn't give a rip. And I think that's what's so perfect about that character, because he's got to be one of the most unique characters in the history of television, in the sense that he's simultaneously super likable and super despisable.
Yep.
Because he's either dead right or he's dead wrong. And he's a jerk either way. He's a jerk about it. Even when he's right, he's kind of a jerk about it. But so many of the things he says are accurate. What did Jeff call him in one season? The social assassin?
The social assassin. Because they were at a dinner party and I can't remember what the complaint was. It was something about the food they were making or something? I can't remember. Something
either.
In that lady's house, though, that he was just like, no. And everyone's like, thank you for telling her that.
Oh, yeah?
Was it her saying LOL out loud or something?
Oh, could be.
I think it was that.
Could be the LOL.
Doesn't laugh, just says LOL.
That's right. I picked that up as a habit, unfortunately. I do that quite often now. I'll say LOL instead of laughing. But yeah, he is the social assassin, and I think that he has had an effect on people. Like, I leave notes on cars now if they're a pig parker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's funny. I never would have done that without Larry. Also, and maybe you're going to touch on this a little bit later, Springsteen. I guess we'll just hook that. How's that?
Yeah, sure.
Something happened in the penultimate episode of Curb involving Bruce Springsteen that pops up at a concert. Yes?
Oh, that. Yeah. Well, that we could talk about because a horrible phrase was uttered in that Springsteen episode about knocking boots on the floor.
Yeah.
And someone held up a sign with that phrase like 20 feet away from Bruce at a concert. There's an amazing picture of him on stage and somebody's holding up the sign as though they're people go to Springsteen concerts and hold up signs to request songs.
Yeah.
And they took the song If I Was the Priest and changed the word priest to this phrase. That was pretty funny.
That's fantastic. But yeah, overall, I thought it was just a terrific finale. This was a slam dunk and I think deserves to be in the conversation of the greatest finales of all time. To get a do-over like that and stick the landing perfect. And there's the final shot of the six of them sitting, or seven of, I don't know how many were in the shot, but they're all squabbling and swearing at each other. Just perfect. I love this show. And I seeing the old clips made me want to go back and rewatch it.
Absolutely.
And that's a problem for me because I would like to be that guy who can just put on one episode a day, but I'm not. I will fall into obsessive binge mode, and then my whole life will suddenly become Curb Your Enthusiasm, in spite of the fact that I really have a hard time binging this show. Like, one episode, two episodes in a day is a lot.
Because we've mentioned before, because it's just exhausting because it's so confrontational that you're just kind of, your whole body just tightens up when you watch it because you just preemptively cringing because you know the big fight's coming with him picking an argument like with a guy in a wheelchair or something like that, right? So it's like, what is he going to do next? But yeah, so to watch several hours in a row of that is a tall order.
But I look forward to your thoughts when you do eventually rewatch Curb Your Enthusiasm. Also, just want to quickly touch on this before we get to Jeff's review of Monkey Man and point to a movie that is out on October 4th. We got our first teaser trailer for it this week.
We use music to make us whole, to balance the fractures within ourselves.
Joker, folie à deux. And if you're wondering, what does that mean? Folie à deux means a delusion or mental illness shared by two people in close association. So in this case, we've got the Joker and Lady Gaga joins the cast as Harley Quinn, and they're both in some sort of an institution, and the big thing here is that this is a musical, and the director Todd Phillips says it's not a musical, it's a movie that has a big music component. It'll make sense when you see it.
Yeah, I believe. Well, I mean, the Joker movie one, that guy lives in a fantasy world a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I imagine the musical part of it was be tied to that. Maybe.
I've only seen that Joker movie once, and I can't remember how much of it was actually happening and how much of it was just in his head.
I remember there was stuff where I found out later like that, oh, that didn't happen. That was just in his head. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know why I didn't pick that up. I'm too dumb to watch a movie, apparently.
Well, and did you like it, first one?
I didn't mind it. I didn't love it like the way some people did. And I haven't felt the need to ever rewatch it.
Same. I'm exactly the same. I didn't hate it. I thought it was fine. I didn't adore it. For me, I found, like, I really liked how they portrayed how his life went to put him in the miserable position he's in today. But I think they went like two or three steps too far. Mm-hmm. Like, it was got to a point where I remember saying this in my review, I wanted to stand up and shout, "We get it! Your life sucks! Yeah. Now, can we just get on with it? Get to the Joker stuff?
Jokerize him already. Come on." I'm also of the mind that's like, Joker without Batman is, I would rather have a watch a Batman movie that's got Joker in it.
Fair. Totally fair. Maybe that'll happen one day. Who knows? In the meantime, I want to hear about the Monkey Man. Jeff's got a review next. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and I saw a new movie. Dev Patel directs and stars in Monkey Man.
When I was a boy, my mother used to tell me a story of a demon king and his army. They brought fire and terror to the land until they faced the protector of the people, the white monkey.
You need to fight for all of us.
Spooky.
Monkey Man is a revenge movie that has a lot of similarities to other recent revenge movies like the John Wick series or The Beekeeper from earlier this year. Although it feels a good deal more violent, which is saying something. There are also fewer guns in John Wick. Monkey Man is a lot more about punching and kicking and stabbing. The movie is set in India in what is apparently a fictional city. Dev Patel's our hero. He's the Monkey Man. And he's a guy who fights in an underground fight club kind of thing, but he wears a gorilla mask while he fights. It looks pretty cool, but it also looks really painful. Like I said, the violence is violent. He just trying to do that to scrape by, though. His real mission in life is to kill the people who ruined his life, like John Wick with the dog, or like Jason Statham with Mrs. Cosby and The Beekeeper. I will say Dev Patel has a better reason to seek revenge than those guys did, as 50 lives for the life of one dog. Is that a fair trade? I don't know. Dev Patel's reasoning seems a little bit more...
But it was a gift from his dead wife!
I know, it's true.
All they had to do was leave him alone! And he was out!
They also stole his car.
Yes!
That's true. But, you know, Monkey Man slowly brings us up to speed, though, to find out his motivation as the movie goes along, so I don't want to spoil anything. We don't find out his whole backstory immediately. We get bits and pieces here and there through flashbacks, but we do get to enjoy watching some fighting all the way through, and like I said, it's bloody. I was squirming quite a bit. It's a lot of that, but nothing too far over the line where I had to look away, so it was kind of... right in the sweet spot as far as this is really violent, but not so bad you can't look at it. It's also cut together very fast a lot of the time. There's a frenetic, messy look to everything with a handheld camera and unusual angles, that sort of thing. And that helps to make it feel kind of fresh because, I mean, we do get a lot of these movies now that are either Wick-style revenge movie knockoffs or Taken-style one-man wrecking crew out for violent justice kind of things. The top 10 on Netflix this week has had two of these, The Retirement Plan with Nicolas Cage and The Baker with Ron Perlman. Monkey Man also weaves some of the social justice issues in India into the story. I have no idea what the political situation is over there as far as the connection to this movie, but clearly parts of this movie are a comment on it. Mostly, though, it is Dev Patel kicking butt and taking names. At one point, after suffering a defeat of sorts, he has to regroup and there's a training montage, so you really get all the tropes you expect here. But again, because of the style, the location that we don't see a ton of in Hollywood movies, the fact that this is not the 10th time we've seen Dev Patel do this, it does feel fresh and exciting. The movie also literally mentions John Wick at one point, so Patel's not trying to hide the influences here. I also saw a thing online this week that was showing clips of Tarantino movies and how specific shots in his movies were identical to shots in other movies that he loves, because Tarantino likes to take moments from his favorite movies and put them into his own. And one example was a cool silhouette shot from Kill Bill that was originally in a samurai movie a few years before that. And then Dev Patel did his own version of that same shot in Monkey Man. It's a lot of fun. It's a really wild ride. It maybe slows down a little bit too much in the middle, but the story is kind of worth a lot more than you usually get in these movies, so that didn't bother me too much. And I think if he wants to, Patel could be a great director. I mean, we'll see. Sometimes one movie is enough for actors to kind of quench their thirst for directing, but sometimes they flip entirely and become just directors. So I don't know what the future holds for Dev Patel. He seems quite comfortable on either side of the camera. I will also say that at one point Patel wears a waiter uniform, and it's like a fancy suit waiter uniform with a bow tie and a coat and a vest and all this stuff, and it actually made me get on board with the notion of him being the next James Bond. His name comes up a lot online when people are speculating about who will be the next Bond, and he's the right age. He's British. He's got my vote. He's also super handsome, which you need in a Bond, and it was actually my girlfriend's idea to go watch this movie because she's in love with him, and I hope to... never run into Dev Patel in real life while she's with me, because that'll be the last time I see her. I just know it. But I'm glad I went, because it's a great movie. I'll give 4 couch cushions out of 5 for Monkey Man in theaters now.
Excellent stuff. And yeah, this is a big year for these ultra-violent revenge movies. We've talked about this before, but if you missed that, coming out on April 24th, We have a movie called Boy Kills World starring Bill Skarsgård, set in a dystopian future, deaf person with a vibrant imagination. When his family is murdered, he's trained by mysterious people and they go on this vengeance quest and it looks crazy. And then later in June, June 7th, we have The Crow remake, which also stars Bill Skarsgård. So he's clearly having a fun year. Just murdering and getting revenge all over the place.
We'll have to add up his body count by at the end of the year.
But we want to talk about as well what's new in theaters this weekend. And I reluctantly want to see this. And I say reluctantly given its subject matter as we march towards a U.S. presidential election later this year. The movie is Civil War.
19 states have seceded.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The three-term president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything on.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
The U.S. has gone to war with itself, and Ron Swanson is the president.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
Every instinct in me says this is death.
Blood it.
Every time I survived a war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
Kirsten Dunst leads a team of military-embedded journalists trying to travel across the country as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House, and along the way they encounter a creepy Jesse Plemons.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you? You don't know.
So I think this movie looks great. It feels kind of like the Forever Purge, but with bigger stakes. I hope it turns out to be good and not just a good concept. But so far, the reviews are good. They're solid. 87% on Rotten Tomatoes, which sums it up with tough and unsettling by design. Civil War is a gripping close-up look at the violent uncertainty of life in a nation in crisis. It's directed by Alex Garland, who's done some solid movies, including Ex Machina, Annihilator. He was a screenwriter and a producer on one of my favorite films ever, Dread. He was also a writer on movies like 28 Days Later and Sunshine. Pardon me, did I say Annihilator? I meant Annihilation. And I think this looks great, but boy, oh boy, I'm...
So Annihilation, the one with the that undead bear?
Maybe.
With Natalie Portman?
Natalie Portman, yeah.
I've seen that bear scene, and it freaked me out, and I had nightmares, so I don't know why I watched it, but it is. I'm going to have to be in the right mood to go watch Civil War at some point, and like, if you were to tell me we're going right now, I'd say, no, I'm not going right now, because I'm not in the mood to see that right now. Yeah. So it's going to be a movie like that. I hope it's good, too, and I assume at some point I will see it, but it doesn't look like that much fun.
One of the comments that I see that's fairly common is, this is a good movie. Good for them for doing it. I never want to see this again.
Yeah.
And I've also heard that it doesn't really pick a side. It's not like that's why they're sort of, they follow these journalists because they're just trying to get the story. They're just trying to get the pictures. That's it. They're not on anyone's side. They just want to tell the story. So we'll see what kind of story it tells at the box office. Up next, got to tell you about something crazy that happened on the new X-Men cartoon. And I must tell you about the aforementioned Showcase of the Immortals. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are The Couch Potatoes. I've been talking about the Showcase of the Immortals. I will explain what that is in just a moment. But first, I never watched the X-Men cartoon in the 90s. And I sort of regret that because, first, let me just play their theme song for you. Which is awesome. I've always heard great things about their theme song. And now, 5 episodes in, I love it! X-Men 97 on Disney+. Here comes the flourish for the theme. Yeah, that's cool. So 90s. But yeah, I never watched the X-Men cartoon in the 90s. It aired from 92 to 97, I believe. I did read X-Men comics at one point, and I always liked them. But by the time the cartoon came around, I don't know, I guess I just was over cartoons. I would have been in like grade 9 or grade 10. And I'm now glad that I'm watching this X-Men 97 because it picks up, apparently, pretty much right from where that series ended. So it just carries that story on. And episode 5 is being compared to the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. So I don't want to spoil it, but if you've seen the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones, that was bad. So that's all I want to tell you is that the 5th episode of X-Men 97 went to a place I never anticipated any Marvel show, never mind a cartoon. It was scary. Like I kept waiting for a reset button, some sort of time reset.
Or somebody to wake up and like, oh, it's just a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. But some bad things happen. Have you watched any of this yet, Jeff?
I have not watched any of this yet. I was going to. I got excited when I saw it ad, and then it's like, oh, it's a continuation of a cartoon. I don't recall a cartoon from the 90s at all, but I was like, oh, okay, it's based on something earlier that I don't know about, so I was afraid to start watching it.
Okay. So, that's on Disney Plus. They release new episodes on Wednesdays. So far, I am loving it. It's the best thing Marvel has released in quite some time, as far as I'm concerned. But now, let us divert our attention. I mentioned earlier, there's a rabbit hole that I fell down a few months ago, and it culminated this weekend.
Yes, what The Rock is cooking.
WrestleMania XL, aka WrestleMania 40. It happened in Philadelphia over two nights. And whatever you think about pro wrestling, I just want you to hang with me for a second here. I'm not here to review the card or the quality of the matches or whatever. The reason why I ended up watching this is, like, I was a wrestling fan when I was a kid. Hulk Hogan, kind of the, like, WrestleMania 2, I think, had just come out when I was really getting into it. So I used to watch Saturday Night's Main Event and all that stuff. I love the Macho Man. Did you ever like pro wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
No, I never watched hardly any of it, but just from being a kid in the 80s, you know who Macho Man is, and you know who a lot of these guys were. So I was never a regular viewer. I did see some of it.
Yeah, it permeated pop culture. They had a cartoon.
Yeah,
Hulk Hogan rockin' wrestling, which I loved. And there were toys. I don't know if he was Hulk Hogan yet, but when he appeared as Thunderlips in Rocky 3.
Right. Should we review No Holds Barred next week?
Maybe. That is a terrible movie. Yeah. Rip him. He played a guy named Rip, and he had that little hand thing that he did. He was like, rip him.
Versus Zeus, right?
Yeah, Zeus. And so I watched it when I was a kid. And then I sort of fell off of it after a few years when I was a teenager. And then I got back into it in the late 90s. And for several years, probably about 10 years, I got back into it in the late 90s.
That's when they had a huge resurgence then, right? With The Rock and Stone Cold and all these guys. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, Stone Cold, I think, sort of led that charge.
Yeah.
But it was also The Rock. And specifically, it was The Rock who got me back into it. Because I remember I worked at this little sports store. So we always had TSN on. And we couldn't hear it, but it would just be on. And they would, on Tuesday afternoons, they would replay Monday Night Raw.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd be standing there twiddling my thumbs because it was at a busy store. And I'd be watching the show. And this guy would come out and be like, who is that guy? He looks charismatic. He's always flashing his eyebrow. And he's the people's eyebrow. Right. So I tuned in on my own time and got curious. And The Rock and Stone Cold instantly got me hooked. And so The Rock, really, I love Hogan, love Stone Cold. The Rock is probably my favorite in WWE history. And I even got to go to a WrestleMania with my buddy Mike. We won a contest. We got to go to WrestleMania X7, WrestleMania 17 in Houston, or as General Zod would say, Planet Houston.
Planet Houston.
It was in the Astrodome. We were on the floor, 16th row on the floor. The main event was Stone Cold versus The Rock.
Nice.
So, and maybe that's where my energy for wrestling started to wane again, because I'd reached the mountaintop. As a wrestling fan, if you're a wrestling fan, even a casual fan, you want to go to a WrestleMania. It's the biggest event in the industry, not just for WWE. So when The Rock came back, because now he's part of the ownership group now. He's a chair or member of the board of directors. He actually now owns the name The Rock, and he decided to come back because they were going to do this thing where he would face his cousin, real cousin, Roman Reigns, who was in the, is it Sean Hobbs or Hobbs and Shaw?
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
It's actually Fast and Furious Present Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay. So they are cousins, and they were going to face each other. They've been talking about a possible Rock versus Roman Reigns match at WrestleMania for years. Almost happened last year. Schedule didn't quite work or whatever. I don't know. So this year, he comes back and he announces that this is going to happen. But then the fans reacted in a way that showcased why wrestling is so special, and it showcased what works about all entertainment. And I'm just going to fire up another piece of music here.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
This is a song called Kingdom, which, by the way, topped Apple's rock charts after WrestleMania.
Oh, really?
And I happened to turn on some random soccer game in the Champions League on Tuesday, and one of the teams came out to this music.
Interesting.
This is the music of Cody Rhodes, he's the American Nightmare, the son of the legendary Dusty Rhodes, who was the American Dream. So Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble in January, which means he gets an automatic ticket. Like, that's punching your ticket to the main event at WrestleMania. But then The Rock comes in later and says, no, it's going to be me and Roman Reigns. And he graciously stepped aside. The fans went insane. Like, there was a genuine furor. So the company paid attention, listened to their fans, and turned everything around in a way that no one expected. The Rock, who, when he was first coming up, well, when he first came up as The Rock, when he first appeared in WWE, he was Rocky Maivia, and everyone hated him. And then he became The Rock, a bad guy, or a heel, as they say in wrestling. And he was an excellent heel, but whenever he pops up, people go nuts and cheer for him. He's been a babyface, as they call it, a good guy for years. They turned him heel, and oh my gosh, did they ever turn him heel? We haven't seen this version of The Rock in 20 years, and it was beautiful. And I'm sitting there watching Friday Night SmackDown, watching The Rock come out in the sunglasses and the Versace shirts and vests. I'm like, did I just step back in time to 1998? This is fantastic. I love it. And the story culminated to WrestleMania 40, where the good guys would try to get their shots in the weeks leading up to it, but the bad guys always just were one step ahead of them. It was classic wrestling storytelling. And I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. It doesn't matter what you think about professional wrestling, but it's like any form of entertainment. Why do we watch? Because of the story, because of the characters.
Yeah.
Look at NCAA, the women's basketball. More people watched the women's championship than the men's championship. Almost 20 million people for the first time ever because of Caitlin Clark, her story. They wanted to see if she would finish her story and become the national champion with the Iowa Hawkeyes. They lost to South Carolina, but people were interested in her story. They were interested in the character. And it was this. The fans were invested in Cody Rhodes, and the company decided, you know what, we're going to roll with this. Told us a great story, gave us great characters, and I'm thrilled, and I think I'm all in again, which is a problem. I think I stopped being a wrestling fan in 2006 when we started doing the couch potatoes, because I just didn't have time to watch wrestling anymore.
Yeah. How many times a week is there wrestling to watch?
There's WWE three times a week.
Okay. And like an hour each time or 2 hours each time?
Raw is 3 hours on Monday.
God.
There's Friday Night SmackDown, which is 2 hours. And then there's also NXT. And I can't remember what day that airs. That's just WWE. There's also AEW, which is All Elite Wrestling, which is also... So
I don't have time to invest in all of it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be paying attention to WWE because I'm hooked. I'm invested. Cody finished the story, but I want to know what is his next story. So wrestling. Yeah, wrestling. Up next, we got to revisit the boss. You are listening to the Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and I finished watching Ripley on Netflix this week.
Tom is one of those people who takes advantage of people. He's taking advantage of Dickie.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I went into great detail about this show last week. You can go listen to the old episode of that on your podcast machine. If you like Ripley on Netflix, stars Andrew Scott as Tom Ripley. He's a con artist and a scammer who's about to commit some even more serious crimes. It's an 8-episode series based on the novel that the movie, The Talented Mr. Ripley, was made in 1999 with Matt Damon. It's a slow burn thriller, and after watching all the dominoes get set up over the first half of the series, the real excitement comes in the back half as they all fall down. Basically, it's a cat and mouse game with Ripley trying to stay two moves ahead of the police and others who are on his case, and it was just terrific. Last week when I was talking about it, I had not gotten to the part with the cop yet, and he's amazing. This Italian actor who's playing the cop is fantastic. He's very smart, and so it's even more exciting, you know, when Ripley slips through his fingers time and again. I raved about it last week, like I said. I can report it holds up all the way until the end. I think it actually gets better the last 3 episodes than the first 5 episodes. I enjoyed them so much. I watched them this week. I might watch this series again because I mentioned how gorgeous it looks. It's black and white cinematography, and it looks just amazing because it's coastal in Italy and in Rome and this sort of thing. It looks just fantastic. I highly recommend, if you like the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley, check out the show Ripley on Netflix. 4 couch cushions out of 5 for that. And one more thing I want to talk about this week, Brett. I'm not looking for reasons to talk about Bruce Springsteen.
Whatever.
But he keeps popping up. He was on several episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm this season, which we mentioned. And now there's word that they are making a biopic.
Hey, kids. It's time for Counting with Bruce Springsteen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, All right. What did I get up to?
The movie will be based on a book that came out last year called Deliver Me From Nowhere, which I've read and is fantastic. It focuses on the period of his life in the early 80s. He's already made 5 albums. He's just coming off a very successful tour for The River, and he's not sure what to do next. He doesn't have a home. He doesn't have much money, and he's a little depressed, which would be an ongoing battle in his life. Out of this period comes his album Nebraska, which is one of his best. The short version of the story of that album is that he made some demos at home with an acoustic guitar, a harmonica, and his own voice, with the intention of turning those songs into a big full band E Street album with his boys. But nothing ever sounded as good as the plain acoustic, very sparse demos, and so they just released the demo version as the album. It's a very dark album as well. The title song, Nebraska, for example, is about a serial killer awaiting his execution. Yada, yada, yada. It's an interesting part of his life. The book is terrific. And now 20th Century Studios and Disney are getting a movie together. It'll be directed by a man by the name of Scott Cooper, who's written and directed such movies as Crazy Heart, Black Mass, and Hostiles. Crazy Heart, kind of apropos, that was a movie where Jeff Bridges just played a country singer, and he won an Oscar for it. And as of this recording, nothing is official, but the word appears to be that recent Emmy winner Jeremy Allen White from the show The Bear will play Springsteen. I'm not a huge musical biopic fan in general. Most of them aren't that good, especially if you like the movie Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story, which is a satire of those kind of movies, but is also actually somehow among the best examples of how of a good version of those kind of movies.
You stop talking about that music!
But it's my dream, baby.
Daddy said that if we moved back home, he could give you a permanent job at the slaughterhouse. You can make an honest living. You wouldn't have to hang your head in shame, walking around like some kind of a failure.
Well, I think I'm doing okay for a 15-year-old with a wife and a baby.
Ain't no musician ever made no money, Dewey.
Edith, I am starting to think that maybe you don't believe in me.
I do believe in you. I just know you're going to fail.
Anyways, most of the music stars don't need movies about them anyways. They're either not particularly interesting or their music just speaks for itself. No movie needed. Just listen to their songs. But we'll see. I'll still go opening weekend for whatever this Bruce Springsteen movie turns out to be. Again, super early stages. This will not be coming to theaters anytime soon.
Is that Jenna Fisher playing his wife? Like Pam from The Office?
She is in the movie as his second wife. In the clip we just heard, Kristen Wiig as his first wife.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, good cast either way. Both excellent.
Yeah. It's a great movie. John C. Reilly as Dewey Cox.
All right. So those are cool. And I just wanted to touch on a couple more things that I've been watching this week. With Earth Day approaching, and this... when I say I find myself paying closer attention to nature shows, it's not like from a tree hugger kind of thing or whatever. Like I'm not some raging environmentalist. They just pop up more, right? Like mom themed shows and movies come around Mother's Day, whatever. But it just, so this is a good time of year. If you enjoy nature documentaries, there's always at least one big one that shows up. And I've got two I actually want to tell you about this time. So the first one is Planet Earth 3.
Once again, we journey across our magnificent planet. To meet the astonishing animals that live here.
So this one airs Sundays on BBC Earth. I've spoken of this in recent weeks. I forgot that it was coming, and I thought it came and went. Like, it already played across the pond late last year. And I can't tell if it played in Canada late last year, too. Although they're, just based on what it says on my PVR, like, it actually points to a first aired in blah, 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 November 2023. But their website, BBC Earth, says series premiere March 10th. So, I don't know. Whatever. It's on BBC Earth. It's 8 episodes, so 6 will have aired by this Sunday night, and once again, it is narrated by the inexhaustible Sir David Attenborough, who is 97 years old, and Bron, refresh my memory, because when the first Planet Earth came out,
yeah,
you went out and bought the DVDs?
I've got the DVD set. This was before high definition anything, so that's got to be more than 20 years ago at this point.
Who was the narrator on those DVDs?
David Attenborough.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there wasn't there
was
a controversy?
He was only 77 at the time.
But wasn't there a controversy? Didn't they replace him for the American audience?
Was it that first Planet Earth? Yeah, because one of the Planet Earths for sure was, they did replace the narration, turned it to, it was Oprah, wasn't it?
I think it was Sigourney Weaver.
Or Sigourney Weaver, okay.
I can't remember.
Oprah did a different one then.
Maybe. Okay, sure. Maybe. Well, you know what? I've got another clip here, so we'll see if we can do some quick Googling. So that's Planet Earth 3. The other show is coming soon to Netflix. I've gotten a sneak peek at it. It debuts April 17th. It's called Our Living World.
From the densest forests to the deepest oceans to the hottest deserts, everything is connected through the vast web of life.
Can you see? The time has come.
And now, for the first time, we're going to reveal how.
So narrated by Kate Blanchett. Did you figure it out, by the
2006,
way?
2006, Planet Earth, the first one, Sigourney Weaver. And then a few years later, Oprah did one, BBC Earth Presents Life, narrated by Oprah.
Oh, okay. I wonder if I ever watched that one. All right, thanks for because I couldn't remember. Yeah, there, and I remember people being angry about that. This one's narrated by Kate Blanchett, and it comes from the team behind another great nature show from 2 years ago, Our Great National Parks, which was hosted by Barack Obama. So this one is described as a revealing look at the secret network of connections that unites us all and sustains our planet's most magical phenomenon, life itself. This docuseries spans the globe to showcase the extraordinary creatures and ecosystems, great and small, that work together to help restore and sustain our living world. This one is 4 episodes. So I would say that with the Planet Earth series, that's like the big, to me, that's sort of the king of the mountain when it comes to these event nature shows. And it's more, they do look at specific things, and each episode has a specific theme. But with these other ones, they tend to have a theme, an overall theme, like Our Great National Parks focused on the national parks. And there was a show about the British Isles that came out last year on Earth Day. And there was
Oceans at one time. That was just a movie, though, right?
Yeah. There was one about migration patterns. This one is about the interconnectivity of life and how reindeer grazing grass in, just as an example, reindeer grazing grass in the Arctic can have an effect on the tropical coral reef.
Wow.
And the way that, and how African fires fuel the rain that falls in the Amazon rainforest.
Interesting.
It's fascinating. It's really cool, and it's a good yet. And all these shows do a great job at reminding us, like, this planet is precious, and if we don't stop screwing it up, we're gonna have a problem.
And frankly, the improvements in technology over the years, this is their best use with these nature docs, because it's just amazing.
Yes, yeah. The footage they capture is unbelievable. Have a look. That one's coming to Netflix on April 17th. The other one, Planet Earth 3, BBC Earth Sundays. That's all the time we've got. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are the Couch Potatoes. Remember, if it requires getting up off the couch, don't bother.